Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We ended up in our last episode going down the path of getting halfway through the cod fishery debates that was James Madison kind of taking Congress around the woodshed in teaching them everything that they need to know regarding the Constitution's General Welfare and Defense Clause so that they can start understanding how they're supposed to be governing. Well, regardless, and I think I went down this path and I didn't do a good job at this because I don't think I actually came back around. The reason this is an important document, because this is actually an official document. I get into a lot of discussions with people that say, oh, well, Madison wrote in his journal or Madison said in his notes on the Constitutional Convention. And you have to understand that when Madison wrote his notes on the Constitutional Convention, a lot of those things were quotes, citations. He actually wrote the citations, but his notes were his opinions. And so, are opinions important in a court of law? No. They're insightful. They can give you, you know, what he's thinking, but they are not legally binding. And I remember having this conversation with Dr. Vile, who's been on the show a few times. And, you know, because he brings up a lot of really good, insightful things. But most of those things come from sources that are not necessarily legally binding. So why is it that I am focused on the ratification debates? Because those are, no doubt, legally binding. Regarding the cod fishery debates and Madison's assertions, those are in official capacity in the debates of Congress. And so what Madison is doing is he is exercising his oath of office in supporting the Constitution and telling Congress by his duty of understanding the Constitution as it was understood by the state of Virginia, that this is exactly what the Constitution means. These aren't opinions. These are testimonies. These are assertions to exactly defining that Constitution. That's why this is so important. That's why these documents that I provide you are every single one of them is in official capacity. Even George Washington's farewell address as the President of the United States, he makes parting comments in the capacity as president. And so that's an official capacity. Well, okay, so he's functioning in the application of his oath. It is his duty to support the Constitution. And what you can do is you can read his words, and then you can read the ratification debates and go, hey, these things jive. He is actually supporting, because you could get a forked-tongue lawyer who has become president, like Billy Clinton and or maybe Barack Obama, and get them to actually start saying things, oh, well, you know, we got to do this. I've actually heard Barack Obama make comments regarding the Constitution that is absolutely unconstitutional. He is misleading and are directly lying that the Constitution says this or we have these powers or what have you. What he's doing is he's supporting the subversion of the Constitution that has been done over the past two centuries. He is not what I would say a constitutional, it's not about being pure. He has zero fidelity to the real definitions of the Constitution. He would rather read and support the adoptions of unconstitutional things that have pushed and have slid the Constitution in a direction that supports his agenda. In other words, Many of the things that he's done was a violation of his oath of office. He committed moral perjury. Now, whether he truly believed what he did and whether he knew it, but as far as I am concerned, when you take an oath, when you're held accountable, you know, you got a driver's license, right? And you're driving along and you actually do something that is illegal and you get a ticket, and but you didn't know that, shoot, there was this new law that you can't be driving down the road with a phone in your hand talking on the phone. Well, the police officer will say, well, that's nice, but it's against the law, and here's your ticket. You go explain it to the judge, and you say, I didn't know that this was a law. The judge says, well, ignorance of the law is no excuse. In other words, you have a responsibility to stay attuned with what the heck your state legislators are doing or what the heck you're doing in regards to the law itself. And if you start adapting things that are absolutely perversions of that law because you don't understand, then we've got a problem because you're actually violating that oath of office because the Constitution is what you're supposed to support, not the Warren Court's rulings, because that's not the Constitution. You're not supposed to be supporting, you know, Roosevelt's, you know, actions when he was violating the Constitution. That's how we get into these messes. That's why I say it is very important for Christians to read the Bible on a regular basis so that they understand how the doctrines of Christendom are being perverted. It's the same thing with the Constitution. The only way you know that we have been perverted or the government has subverted the Constitution is by reading the ratification debates in these important documents. So with that, sorry for opening up with that dialogue, but as you know, we left the last episode kind of halfway through the cod fishery bounties with Madison explaining to his fellow congressmen, men that he had known and had been working in the Continental Congress prior to this new government. And so Madison is taking them around the woodshed because as this whole thing was set up, these men were justified their ability to lay out bounties and so forth. And Madison's saying, hey, you know, just because we've been doing something and what you're doing is redefining doesn't make that we can actually do these things. And let's be very clear. This is how the Constitution had been interpreted, not even interpreted. I want to clarify. It had been defined to the states that these are the capabilities, these are the limitations, and so forth. That's why this is so important. Madison lays waste to the concept of the General Defense and Welfare Clause, that it does not mean what everybody's been telling you it means. So we're going to finish this today, and we're also going to get into next, into upcoming episodes, we're going to get into George Washington's farewell address. We're also going to, and I talked about this in the last episode, this is kind of new, but I think it's important that we look at the Tory Acts. Why? Why are we needing to look at the Tory Acts? The Tory Acts were acts that were created while we were going through the Revolutionary War that we made it illegal to be loyalist to the British Crown. We perceived the British Crown a enemy to our fundamental principles that were defined in the Declaration of Independence. We didn't have the Constitution at that point. But the Constitution was built upon the Declaration of Independence and the Articles of Confederation. And so these same people that evicted and deported these British loyalists also progressed themselves towards, you know, the Articles of Confederation, Continental Congress, and then became congressmen and other players in politics. You have to understand, the paradigm is recognizing true enemies of the American principles and our Constitution and what needs to be done. I am here to tell you that as the the Circus Maximus is making promises that they're going to go door to door and violate the Constitution and mandate their draconian, unconstitutional government upon you. Well, sounds pretty clear to me that these people are enemies of the Constitution, and they would fall under those exact same acts that Continental Congress passed called the Tory Acts. So I think it's important that we kind of go through those so that we understand what we should probably do. Because granted, I understand a lot of these people don't like our government and they want to be able to change it. Well, we're not going to let you change it, but you can pick whatever government you really like and we're going to send you there. Because obviously you'll be much better as a citizen over there supporting the government that you prefer instead of trying to be here and subvert and violate and actually do things to our peril against our government, our laws, and our paradigm. And so bottom line is, I think this is a necessary conversation. What are we going to do with these communists amongst us, these Antifas and so forth? I have no problem having them identify, well, I want to go to Cuba. I want to go to Russia. I want to live in China. You know, when somebody in the NBA says, hey, you know, I love China. I think that, you know, what they're doing is great. Then then you should be over there living instead of living here. I'm absolutely okay with shipping them on a one-way, obviously, and I'll get into it when we come back because we're at a hard break. But I want you to understand the implications of the Tory Act and what those brilliant forefathers did, or the framers did. We'll be right back after these two messages. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
So let's understand the byproduct of what happened when the Tory Acts were actually invoked. The British loyalists were only allowed to take what they could carry. And they were lucky to be able to do that. And some things they weren't allowed to carry. Now, there were some that were a little more affluent because I think it's the Belvoirs. You know, I'm bad with names. but they were close friends of George Washington, and George Washington actually saw them onto the ships. And so whether they were allowed to carry a little bit more than what the normal person would have been able to carry might have been so. You know, sometimes the, you know, those types of relationships actually kind of, you know, corrupt or what have you. But anyway, bottom line is that the property that these loyalists had was confiscated. It was a contention throughout the entire negotiations of the Revolutionary War Treaty. And because America would not allow the property, the value of that property to be commuted into a currency that could be cashed in and restore the value of that property to those people in liquid assets or what have you. In other words, the loyalists that were deported, the British crown was trying to get that money to be back into Britain. I mean, we're talking about tens of thousands, not 100,000 loyalists that were shipped out. That was a lot of money that they had lost here in America. Well, bottom line, people that think that you're protected, that your property is protected, well, it's protected as long as you are a citizen and as long as you are not committing the ultimate crime. Now, you got to understand that these people were not hung because of treason. They were hung because, or they were deported, not hanged, because they were loyalist to the enemy. They were viewed as enemies, and the writers and the framers, forefathers, whatever you want to call these men that wrote the Tory Acts, they recognize that you cannot allow the enemy to go unfettered living amongst you, because what they may do is they may actually provide support and or intelligence. And we knew that there was a good possibility that Britain wasn't done with the Revolutionary War and trying to pull us back in. Thus, the War of 1812. I've been telling people the War of 1812 was not a part two. It was just an actualization that the Revolutionary War never really ended. And that is one of the reasons why the founders, or I should say the founders of the states, the initial framers and the initial leaders of government, Washington and the rest of these men, they knew that there was some big bad boogeymen on the other side of that Atlantic that wanted to come in and take over again and teach us a lesson that we will never forget. And that never happened. And that's because these men were ardent supporters and vigilant in watching these nefarious states that were very jealous of what we were what we had and what we had going here. So the whole point is that I believe we have to have this exact same conversation with these communists that have taken over the school, these antifas that are actually trying to create a level of anarchy so that people surrender more liberty. We have to start looking at these people as absolute enemies to our, you know, it may be a friend, it may be family member, but they're enemies. And you have to understand how people are wired. There is a stark difference between champions of liberty and the subjugates who want to enslave us. And the people that are subjugates, they will lie, they will do anything and everything necessary. You have to understand that I do get it. It's innate. Nobody wants to be told what to do. Nobody wants to have the yoke put around their necks to where they are literally forced to do anything and everything. And the subjugates do not recognize that, you know, what they're implementing and what they're supporting will actually bring about that level of slavery. Look at what's going on in China and how the Chinese people are being enslaved to the Chinese Communist Party, which I'm telling you, this is probably the first time I've ever said this, the National Communist Party. If you read anything about communism, it is an international movement. And it is a part of the deep state that is not just in the United States, but the deep state that is trying to move the entire globe, the entire world into an international or a global communist party. So with that, you have to understand why we need to start considering the same things that these forefathers actually thought of. I don't like the word forefathers, but these men that were fighting the revolution and recognizing, you know, what we need to do regarding our enemies. So with that, let me dive into the bounties, because, oh, by the way, if you thought I forgot, and if you don't remember, this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. Wow, I'm halfway through the second segment. Anyway, so in the previous segment, we covered, you know, how Madison had clarified that the previous Congress even understood the exact same language of the General Defense and Welfare Clauses were not portals for them to be able to use the public purse for anything other than those very specific powers. The real problem with Continental Congress was they didn't have the ability to collect. Now this new government had the ability, so now they think that they can, well, shoot, now that we have the ability to put funds into our checking account, now we can start writing checks. And so anyway, Madison goes on and says this. He says, the novel idea now annexed to those terms. In other words, he's talking about this, what they're trying to do in attaching this concept of spending the public funds on anything under that General Welfare and Defense Clause. So he goes on and says, the novel idea now annexed to those terms and never before entertained by the friends or enemies of the government will have a further consequence which cannot be taken into view of the gentleman. In other words, you guys have no idea what the heck you're letting out of the bottle here. Their construction, what they're trying to do, would not only give Congress the complete legislative power I have stated, it would do more. It would supersede all the restrictions understood at present to lie on the power with respect to a judiciary. It would put in it, and let me stop right here. If you understand what has happened, Congress is the one that kind of pushes everything along, and the Supreme Court and the president, they are the ones that are doing the bidding, and it's gotten to a point where they don't even allow Congress to do all of the legislating anymore because Congress just can't get it done. So that's why the court has been legislating, and that's why the president, at blatant violations of the Constitution, allowing the president to legislate, allowing the judiciary, the bench, to legislate. But they're doing it because Congress is too inept to be able to do what they believe needs to be done. So they are working together, the deep state, in making sure whatever is necessary for them to push us in the direction we need to be going, they're getting it done. Now, moving on, it says, it would put it into the power of Congress to establish courts throughout the United States with cognizance of suits between citizen and citizen. And that's what they're doing. And in all cases whatsoever, and that's what they're doing. That's why healthcare, that's why abortion, marriage, they have allowed Congress to pull all of these things in. Or I should say this, the Congress has allowed the Supreme Court to pull all these things in. And it now has the president enforcing these unconstitutional laws. This, sir, seems to be demonstrable. For if the clause in question really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think fit, provide it be for the general welfare of which they are to judge and money can be applied to it, Congress must have power to create and support a judiciary establishment with a jurisdiction extending to all cases. favorable in their opinion to the general welfare in the same manner as they have power to pass laws and apply money, providing in any other way for the general welfare. You want to understand why the court system believes that non-citizens are entitled to welfare? Why non-citizens are entitled to the same rights? Because that's what Congress has used the general welfare clause for. They have subverted and perverted our constitutional republic so bad that getting them back into the framework is a hefty row to hoe. Anyway, let me move on. I shall be reminded, perhaps, that according to the terms of the Constitution, the judicial power is to extend to certain cases only, not to all cases. I've told you this, and the ratification debates spell this out, but too many people do not understand that limitation. We're at a hard break. We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So here's Madison once again identifying the hardcore limitations to government jurisdictions, more specifically to the judiciary or the judicial branch's limitations of jurisdiction. And he says this is the last thing I read. I shall be reminded, perhaps, that according to the terms of the Constitution, the judicial powers is extended to certain cases only, not to all cases, only those things that are enumerated within the Constitution. The federal government is limited to the enumerated powers only. That's been spelled out so many times in the ratification debates. But obviously, just a few years afterwards, they already started taking latitude. And Madison, true to the definitions provided by him in those ratification debates, he didn't waver in his official capacity. Now, people will point out, well, later on, he kind of did. Those were opinions. every time it came to putting boots on the ground or the rubber hitting the road, Madison was true to the definitions provided and everything that he asserted in those ratification debates. But this circumstance can have no effect in the argument, moving on here, and this is Madison again stating, but this circumstance can have no effect in the argument, it being presupposed by the gentleman that the specification of certain objects does not limit the import of the general terms. Taking these terms as an abstract and indefinite grant of power, they comprise all the objects of legislation, regulation, as well as fall under the judiciary article in the Constitution, as those falling immediately under the legislative article, and if the partial or partial enumeration of objects in the legislative article does not, as these gentlemen contend, limit the general power, neither will it be limited by the particular enumeration of objects in the judiciary article. There are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which, as they follow clearly from the doctrine combated, must be admitted or the doctrine must be given up. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may establish teachers in every state, country, and parish and pay them out of the public treasury. Now, as I told you, if you really look at the history of how we've been subverted, Congress was not the culprits in opening up a lot of these things, taking on a religion, taking on education, and so forth. Congress realized that if they were the ones pushing the agenda, they would be in trouble. Because if you voted to actually stifle religion back in the 50s or back in the 40s, as they started to do by the Supreme Court when they started to push this agenda, oh, those congressmen would have been completely pulled back. They would have been replaced. They would have been, their replacements would have undone all of the things that Congress did. So who best to do it other than the judiciary to take on the heat? Why? Because they can't be replaced. Or because people are too afraid of saying, oh, well, this doesn't fall under good behavior. Nowhere do you have the ability to legislate, but they have been able to self-grandize their role that we actually, and how many people do you know keep on looking at the Supreme Court as the supreme arbiters of the Constitution? That is one of the greatest fallacies that people have been told. It is the states who are the ultimate arbiters of whatever that Constitution means. And as I spoke to the gentleman in the University of University of Wisconsin at the Rotunda, where they have the nation's greatest treasures, all of the ratification debates, letters, and everything else. And as I explained to him, that it doesn't matter what the Supreme Court thinks, it doesn't matter what Congress and the President thinks. When the states unite and they start saying, hey, none of this jives with our ratification debates. None of this jives with how we've been sold this thing called a constitution during those debates. Everything is flying in the face of this. We have to demand compliance to our compact. And that's why whatever the states ultimately decide is how things are going to turn out, my friends. That's why it is so critical that you understand, one, this, and two, what we need to do. This is why in 2020, the elections for state representatives and state senators is so critical. This is why we actually need you to put money into those political races in these dark red states so that the dark red states can have good constitutional champions in standing up. Now, will we get some people that will, you know, waffle or not do what they say? Yes, that is why we have to have these people that we're going to financially support actually sign letters of resignation. That means if they do not do what we expect them to do, they will resign. And if they don't, we will take them to court because they've signed a pledge to do so and have failed to commit to that obligation. This is how we're going to do it, my friends. And we can do this, but we actually do need the money. The money will actually drive, because I'm going to tell you, as we hit our first primary that'll come up early next year, if we have the money to actually put behind the pledges, then other people are going to say, wow, you know, I really want to be a champion, and I understand the importance here. I will take that, let's say the risk. I will take this burden on and will gladly surrender and resign my position as an elected official to, you know, because I failed to do what I'm supposed to. In other words, I'm willing to do what I'm supposed to do. So moving on, Madison says this, they may take into their hands the education. So let me back up, because this is the shock value that you really need to understand, because this is where Madison really throws it out there, where, as far as I'm concerned, everybody starts going, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? This is huge, because these men understood the barriers of these types of things that they did not want government to do, because it was the exact same thing of what the kings and the crowns of Britain and other countries and governments have done. And he says, if Congress, so I'm going to reread this last sentence, if Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. So this is where the whole galley goes, oh my gosh. They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish out of Congress and pay them out of the public treasury. And they're doing this today, my friends. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in the like manner schools throughout the Union. They may assume the provision for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest objects of the state legislation down to the most minute object of police will be thrown under the power of Congress, for every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. Now, this is really, you've got to understand what he just said here. And these things were truly, you know, dropping everybody's jaws that were in the chambers at that point in time, because there was probably nothing more concerning than the thought of government taking over religion. These men were very religious, and they were very jealous of understanding the ramifications of government controlling religion. And so he goes on and says, the language held in various discussions of this house is a proof that the doctrine in question was never entertained by this body. Arguments, wherever the subject would permit, have constantly been drawn from the peculiar nature of government as limited to certain enumerated objects, instead of extending, like other governments, to all cases not particularly expected. Now, I want to highlight something that just jumps out that you need to recognize this as well. This constitutional republic is unlike any other government, and Madison just laid it out there for everybody to hear it. because he said the language in various discussions of this house is a proof that the doctrine in question was never entertained by this body. Arguments, whatever the subject would permit, have constantly been drawn. Oh, shoot, I just ran into a break. So I will take this on again and point out how Madison points out to them that they're at the helm of a government never, ever before created on the face of the earth. And we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so this is my last episode for today, so I want to wrap this up, but I've got to highlight this, and this is what Madison was saying. Arguments, wherever the subject would permit, have constantly been drawn from the peculiar nature of this government as limited to certain enumerated powers, instead of extending, like other governments, to all cases not particularly expected or accepted. I'm sorry. In a very late instance, I mean, so he points out right there that like other governments, in all cases not particularly expected. In a very late instance, I mean the debate on the representatives' bill or the representation bill. It must be remembered that an argument much used, particularly by a gentleman from Massachusetts, against the ratio of 1 for 30,000, was that this government was unlike the state governments, which had an indefinite variety of objects within their power, that it had a small number of objects to only attend to, and therefore that a smaller number of representatives would be sufficient to administer to it. And so that right there is another nugget of gold that I think is really, really important to highlight, because what he just said is the fact that in the general government, their representation was tied to a ratio of 1 to 30,000. Why is that important? Because today they represent almost a million people, And that's why they've been able to self-aggrandize. But I'm telling you that the representation extending beyond 30,000 is unconstitutional. I've had these conversations on this show with Keith Broders and other people regarding representation in the Constitution. So anyway, as he was pointing out, that it has been used and supported in argument by others, and he points to a gentleman in Massachusetts that says, we don't need to have more than 30,000 constituents in our home state because we don't have as much to govern on. We only have these few enumerated powers. That was the justification as well to help people understand these limitations. Anyway, he goes on and says, arguments have been advanced to show that because in the regulation of trade, indirect and eventual encouragement is given to manufacturers, therefore Congress have power to give money in direct bounties or to grant it in any other way that would answer the same purpose. But surely, sir, there is a great and obvious difference which it cannot be necessary to enlarge upon. A duty laid on imported implements of husbandry would in its operation be an indirect tax on exported produce. But will anyone say that by virtue of mere power to lay duties on imports, Congress might go directly to the produce or implements of agriculture or to the articles exported? It is true, duties on exports are expressly prohibited, but if there were no article forbidding them, a power directly to tax exports could never be deduced from a power to tax imports, although such a power might directly and incidentally affect exports. In short, sir, without going further into the subject, which I should not have here touched on at all, but for the reasons already mentioned, I venture to declare it as my opinion that were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. And what inference might be drawn or what consequence ensue from such a step? It is incumbent on us all well to consider. With respect to the question before the House for striking out the clause, it is immaterial whether it be as struck out or so amended as to rest on the avowed principle of commutation for the drawback. But as a clause has been drawn up by one of my colleagues in order to be substituted, I shall concur in a vote for striking out, reserving to myself freedom to be governed in my final vote for the modification which may prevail. And so, as he gets back into the substance of the argument, he puts things back into context. But clearly, Madison is throwing out, and I'm telling you, he's taking Congress around the woodshed. And he's telling them that you cannot use that general defense of welfare clause as a portal to start subverting the Constitution itself. In doing so, there are dire consequences, because what is to stop the government from aggrandizing its roles, responsibilities, and powers into every facet of our lives? My friends, that's exactly what they did. They did exactly what Madison pointed out that they would do. When you start taking the Constitution out of the construction of its definitions and legal terms. See, these men thought that they had this latitude. And as you understand, in 1798, when Congress actually passed a law that violated the Constitution, then Madison and Jefferson both stepped out of their roles in the federal government and stepped back into leadership in the states by giving the state of Kentucky and Virginia resolutions to stand up against the federal tyranny that had just been unleashed by the Aliens and Sedition Act. And so I'm here to tell you, my friends, that everything that the federal government is doing is unconstitutional, which is specifically why we need to call out for republic review, why we need to demand that the federal government get back into compliance of the Constitution. I mean, there is some real gold right here as Madison lays it out for his fellow congressmen as to what these enumerations behind, like I said yesterday in our previous episode, that the General Welfare and Defense Clause is clearly the first, it's a preamble to the powers delegated to Congress. The following clauses, the following, I should say, subsections from 2 to 18 clarify exactly what those powers are limited to. They were not a general grant of powers, but a general concept that they were going to be uniform and so forth, and then that these are the powers that they have been absolutely granted. And that's how it was explained. This is all in congruence. This is all in harmony with everything that was explained to the states as the states ratified. Had they not used these terms in defining the Constitution, I'm here to tell you, my friends, the Constitution would not have been ratified. They would have had to have changed it. They would have had to have modified it to compel the states to say, wow, okay, so you are a limited defined government, because the states were not going to allow general powers to go to a centralized government. They just fought a revolution to get away from that type of government. And there's no way they were going to allow themselves to be put into a situation where they would instantly create a centralized government with general powers. So let me get back to the one thing that I've talked about before, because if you understand the differences between the champions of liberty and the champions that are subjugates, these differences are stark. The subjugates will do anything necessary to get you to believe, just like Alexander Hamilton said some pretty interesting things in the Federalist Papers, and I think that they were things of sleight of hand. It was clear that after the Constitution was passed, he started attacking the Constitution by asserting that there were applied powers and so forth. I'm here to tell you that it doesn't matter what anything Alexander Hamilton said, especially in an official capacity, because nothing he said is supported by the ratification debates. So more importantly, the champions for liberty are those that want to ensure we protect, and they want everybody to come to the acknowledgement or the realization and actualizing in their own life the ability to make their own choices for themselves and to allow others to make choices for themselves. If you understand those principles of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, champions for liberty want all people to partake in that. Subjugates will say, oh, yeah, we kind of want you to have your own say and your own thing, but as long as it's within the framework that we're going to let you have. They gradually change their positions. Remember, the ends justify the means. A subjugate is a person that is constantly morphing and changing their position as their ability to assume more power and control over you. They become more tyrannical and more despotic in governing you. Now with that, I hope you have a great weekend. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.